Hi, I'm Sean Healy, and you're listening to Tools. Hi everyone, Sean Healy, personal change agent here, and welcome to episode 28 of Sean Healy Tools, a podcast designed to support entrepreneurial couples, people in business partnership, and anyone looking for more tips, tools, and strategies to add to the quality of their life. So welcome to episode 28, entitled Soft Skills and Emotional Literacy. I thought I would just continue on a little bit of the theme of the last couple of episodes, episode 27 in particular, where we were looking at some of the skills that are required for staying relevant in future business. It really is the case, I think, as I'm working in businesses these days, that there is more and more of a push for effective, efficient business systems, whilst at the same time coupled with people who are emotionally intelligent. They can adapt and be appropriate. They've got a broad range of communicational reach, and I'm able to do my best to get along with more and more people coming from a platform of respect. So that was why it was sort of so relevant to me, because I think going forward, especially in organizations that are very sort of middle management heavy, as systems become more and more automated and businesses streamline while still looking to be more productive, the people that will be left standing are those that have the best communication skills. And part of this is developing our emotional literacy, which can be challenging when we weren't necessarily raised with parents that had good emotional literacy. This doesn't necessarily mean or have anything to do with whether or not our parents loved us. It's more about how good their capacity was to meet our emotional needs in certain situations and give us workable tips and strategies and guidance as to, one, how to make meaning out of certain events, how to recover from certain events, and then how to, you know, and then how to have a strategy to move on from certain events. All human beings have challenges, great joys, and great tragedies from time to time. And for some of us, that, you know, we can be muted in both our numbed out to our pain, but also numbed out to our joy, an element of disassociation that we may have picked up as a survival method for some of the things that happened to us in our childhood, based off what we didn't get, the support we didn't get that we might have needed when we were confronted with challenging situations. And that's where the idea of emotional neglect becomes so poignant, because to me, for some people, the idea of emotional neglect is the backdrop. You may have grown up in a family system that had a lot of physical things. You were well fed, you were well clothed, you were well educated, but you might not have been well emoted in the sense that maybe mum and dad were too busy. Maybe mum and dad had substance issues. Maybe mum and dad had their own wounds to deal with. And so we got inconsistent parenting. We got inconsistent emotional responses, and we got inconsistent emotional guidance. So that sometimes what makes certain events in our life worse is how are we supported afterwards? How were certain things explained to us, especially, you know, when we're doing our best as younger children to make meaning of certain events? You know, were things explained to us? Were we put in situations where our developmental maturity was acknowledged and recognized? If you were put in situations where you were expected to do things beyond your developmental maturity, then this can be a setup for failure. And you can start to have beliefs about your own, take on unsupported beliefs about your identity and your capability because, you know, I tried these things and I failed. But there was no consideration potentially as to whether or not you were actually, you know, nothing to do with capability, but just developmental maturity. You sometimes see this when there's a large gap between siblings and the younger siblings are trying to do what the older ones are doing. You know, if there's one of the kind of considerations sometimes in working with individuals as they kind of explore how their past may potentially be limiting their future or impacting some of the choices that they're making in the present, it's considered sometimes that if you've got siblings 6 years or older than you, that you almost look at their influence as if they're another parent figure. So that for some of us, we can have almost three or four parents, especially if our parents have ended up handballing the responsibility of raising children periodically to older siblings. I certainly know for myself, there was an event or two, there wasn't that level of distance between myself and my brother, but there were certain events where I was required to, or certainly felt responsible for my younger brother in areas where I simply did not have the capacity, the tools, or the patience to be able to manage those systems. And unfortunately, my brother wore the brunt of that. And I felt a lot of distress and guilt for some of those things for a very long time. To a degree, children can get inadvertently set up. Like I said, this is not a blame thing. This is like many of the things we talk about in this series. It's coming from an informed place, a place of knowledge that allows us to begin to put together, if we need to, more constructive self-beliefs. We can challenge some of those limiting beliefs about capability of the past. Oh, you know, I never succeeded here. Is that purely because you didn't have the right mentors, you didn't have the right knowledge, and the right things weren't in place for that to be the case? Not anything to actually do with you, but rather, you know, what specifically was missing that if it had have been there, I would have had a win on that day or over that time, or I would have achieved that goal. So the idea of, you know, expanding your emotional literacy, adding it to your repertoire in how you deal with, address and support yourself, and also how you deal with, address and support others, I think going forward is going to be a skill set that becomes more and more prominent. And I'm certainly seeing that movement in business these days where a lot of people are getting the relevance of soft skills and developing soft skills, but not quite necessarily sure. I can see it's important. I'm just not quite sure what to do or how to do in that arena. So we're getting to the why it's important. We're getting to the personalized sense of relevance. Now, what do I do and how do I do it? So that's where we're sort of at. And I think that too is appearing in modern parenting, where parenting are getting that children equate love with time. To a certain extent, you know, if my parents love me, they'll spend time with me. Because my parents spending time with me, I must be valuable and precious, or all of those elements. However, we're not necessarily educated yet on how to make the most of that time, how to be present with children, how to support children. The amount of time in public where I see little tots fall over, and then the parent's first response as they yank the child up is, you're okay, while blood comes out of a knee, you know. And if you think about falling over as an adult and your friend is with you and they yank you up and say, hey, you're okay, you're likely to retort and go, what are you talking about? This is agony, you know. You're not going to be necessarily buying into their view of your experience or their dismissal of your experience. And you can do that because you're an adult and you can champion yourself to a degree, whereas obviously children can't necessarily do that. And I kind of got the idea of this episode, watching a parent rage at a child in the street and calling them useless and using a lot of swear words. And it was evident to me that the child could not do what the parent was demanding. They were too young. I would have thought they were about 2 years old. The developmental maturity was not there. Children at that age, as they're developing their extroverted sensing element of themselves, this is a cognitive function of personality type, that extroverted sensing is about our engagement with the external sensory world. And part of how we develop that function is we move around, we engage with the world through our senses, we put stuff in our mouth, we pick things up, we stare at things, we get engaged, we get distracted by sounds, smells, all of that information is coming in as we start as little ones to explore the world, and we haven't worked out an attention strategy yet. So anything can kind of grab our attention, pull us off course. By nature, we're going to be more mobile because we're kind of, tactilely exploring the world space. So from that perspective, we're going to be probably a lot more actively engaged in the world compared to some adults carry this function through fairly prominently, others let it sit back a little bit in their awareness, either consciously or unconsciously. But certain people, just by their nature, are far more, movement is a far more prominent element of their process, and their attention moves around a lot more rapidly. And if we've got children who, just through nature of how they develop, grabbing everything. This is not necessarily naughty behavior. If they're getting distracted, it's just part of growth as a child. So we're not placing expectations on children and denying their natural development. And I could see the person, because in part of their rant, we got a little bit of their story that they were late. And you kids are always making me late, with a few more colourful expletives thrown in and a lot more of an aggressive tonality directed at the children, you know. And even at one point, the parent has grabbed one of the children's arms and pulled the child along, then let the child's arm go and expected the child still to keep walking at the same momentum as the parent. It was just an absolute setup and sad to see, both, and not just from the child's perspective, but from the parent too. And I sometimes think a bit more education that allows us to plan and allow a bit more for natural developmental elements, so that we're not setting children up for failure, and not blaming them for things that they just simply aren't able to do. And also, we're not there supporting children in how to develop always as well as we can. And when they have emotional or physical upsets, we're also not helping them to process that in a healthy way, categorize that internally as this experience might mean that, but it also might mean this. You know, the child fails, and so they make a generalized unsupportive belief. I'm useless, I'm no good at things, rather than going, failure is just a part of success. And if you're looking to learn, you're going to have to understand that this is not necessarily a personal thing, it's just a process thing. Everybody fails. Everybody misses the mark. And that's contrast is part of how we learn powerfully. I got some really good distinctions on what to do by doing what you know, by doing the things that didn't work. And I certainly know in my life, sometimes the greatest leaps forward have come from, stemmed out of events and ideas that actually fell really flat. And to develop the strategy within myself to be the kind of person who can still take risks regardless. One of the things I'm most proud of going forward, and one of the things I've really had to develop as a business person, is the capacity to have people say no to me and not let that affect me at the core. I used to get really sensitive, as we've talked about in a previous episode way back when. You know, one of the things that I really enjoy as a skill going forward is the ability to take a risk and to be able to hear no and not let that stop me. Once in a while, when I think I've put everything together in the right kind of way and I've got an expectation that someone will say yes and they say no, that stings. And I might pull back within myself. But even then, I notice that doesn't last as long. It's not as intense. And then I'm going back into, all right, what did I miss? What could I have done? And this has nothing to do with me. I don't know all the story. And what might I do better next time to get a yes? But I'm honoring and I'm nurturing within myself the hurt too. I'm not dismissing that. I'm going, ow, that really stung. That person said no to me. Okay. What kind of meaning am I making of this? How's it making me feel? Is it something that I was so attached to that I might need to grieve a missed opportunity and cry for 5 minutes? Okay, then that's what we'll need to do. And then how do we learn and move on? And what kind of meaning am I making from this? Especially making sure that I'm not jumping up into generalized negative beliefs about my capabilities. Oh, I'm useless. I'm a terrible salesperson. I'm a terrible business person. You know, things like this that certainly don't support us in any way, shape, or form. But we're sitting too with the emotions. Or I'll go and talk to a friend. I'll externalize the experience. I'll go talk to someone who is safe, non-shaming, and can give me both the emotional nurture I need, but then also, if required, some tips for improvement. It's interesting, because we've all got blind spots in how we kind of do elements, so it's important to really be able to have people around us who can hear us, be present for us, and also then be able to give, practical kind of feedback. Am I choosing mentors, role models, and authority figures that I'm going to for advice? And part of that is that they can do that in non-shaming. They can build my confidence and my competence at the same time. That to me is the optimal. How do we develop confidence and competence at the same time? That being said, for some of us, we lack sufficient role models as part of emotional kind of literacy. How do we become confident in a way that doesn't translate to an almost adolescent-like arrogance? You see people who are they're very comfortable in their skill sets. They're very slick. They say all the right things, but there's this edge, this better than edge behind it all. And so how do we grow in healthy confidence? How do we come from a place of being a grounded, stable, confident adult without exuding this almost teenage-like arrogance and dismissiveness towards other human beings? Because I've certainly met some people over the years, and sometimes in industries like sales, this can be quite prominent, where you can see very clearly that people have that kind of swagger about them, but in that kind of, almost adolescent, teenage, child kind of way. And if anything, I think that detracts from their skill. When we come across somebody and going forward in sales, I think it's never been more important when we've got people who are present in a healthy, confident way and they're competent at their skills. These are the people to me who are going to go far further. And when I'm looking to create win-win situations, when I'm really hearing, and honoring your needs and requirements as the customer, long-term, that cooperative approach, that collaborative approach, I believe is going to be the way to go forward. And it's going to be the thing that stands out. You know, people who we can really trust in the sales arena, who also know their stuff, they are rocketing towards the big dollars. And I see nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. How do we make money? But from a place of ethics, from a place of offering real kind of value, if we're focusing on those things, then I think that speaks to, in many industries, to where there's still a bit of a gap to be developed. But that, again, might be another episode to go into at some stage, because that arena is a topic entirely in and of itself. And the idea behind this one, which if you've listened to a lot of these episodes by me, you'd know I love a tangent or 10, is about the idea of developing emotional literacy. Like I said, so that we are more effectively attuned to ourselves, we can acknowledge what's going on for us. And part of that is really getting to what's important for us as an individual. How do I support myself through the journey of that? In particular, sometimes when I'm employing as a strategy to fulfill those things that are important to me isn't quite going to plan yet. So how do I kind of nurture myself and support myself through that as I adjust to the feedback? And then equally as important is our ability to manage the experience, the emotional experiences of others. Again, in personality type, if we're talking about extroverted feeling, or what sometimes termed our social guide function. People with good extroverted feeling, these people are very sensitive to the overall emotional mood of any other individuals or groups. They're very good at tracking where things are at that level, and also generally have very good skills in or their attention is towards the economy of emotional energy. Everybody's feeling down in the group right now. Okay, how do I lift everybody up? So these people sometimes who really work and exercise this element of themselves, we've all got it within us, this capacity to track and respond to social mood. Some of us are more sensitive to it than others, and some of us have better developed skills than others in these areas. You know, you've certainly got some people who are so good at really appearing warm and inspiring. And then, of course, there's others who, even though they try to be, warm and acknowledge, oh, you're a lovely person, you've done really well there. You know, by nature of the clippedness of their voice and the pace of their voice, you can tell that this is not necessarily a skill set that comes to them as well. Even, you know, some people, even though they're trying to express and address social mood, just don't have necessarily the repertoire or the capacity to do it in any kind of effective way. Or they'll be a bit numb and dismissive to it. Oh, it doesn't matter how you feel, just get on with the job. And I think we need to be able to embrace both going forward. To me, that seems to be something that modern workplaces are moving more and more towards. And that is demanding, because certainly, yeah, we need to be able to work in as harmonious environments as possible. But part of keeping a harmonious workplace environment is sometimes we have to be able to speak truth with kindness and respect to say, these are the things that are not working, or this behavior is not acceptable. And if you've ever been in environments where you've had one or two toxic people in the workplace, you know straight away how detrimental that can be to a work environment. That's one of the things I'm very passionate about in my work with business cultures, because I've worked in businesses where, you know, I felt sick in the stomach on a Sunday afternoon, knowing that I had to go back to somewhere for another week. and the relief on a Friday night or a Saturday morning when I knew I had a day or two away from the place. So that's part of why I'm so passionate about people culture, that we can create workplace environments that are both productive and successful, because if we're not making the money, if we're not reaching the targets, then the business isn't going to last long, no matter how harmonious the environment is. But then how do we optimize the environment so that we're also making people feel psychologically safe and we're bringing out the best in that that kind of arena? So that, as I say, part of emotional literacy is the ability to get better at reading the external mood. You know, how is my coworker doing or my coworkers? And then being able to support and address and then energetically move that in the direction that we want. You know, if people are down, how do I hear them? How do I validate them? And then how do I give them some tips to start to uplift? Well, I know what it's like for me, where, you know, those moments where everything seems to be going wrong, I hate that. But I sometimes find that what works for me, you know, this is an example of kind of talking and supporting to somebody, but what works for me is to remember why I'm here, to you know, think what it's going to be like in 20 years' time when I've got my my portfolio of investment properties, and you know, or I'll think about my friends or my family or something that brings to me a sense of gratitude and a bigger picture than this moment. I know why I'm going through this moment. I know why I'm flat, and I acknowledge that. And I've also got, to a degree, a metaphoric grappling hook that also helps me to pull out. You know, it's kind of like you're in the quicksand and somebody throws you a rope, or metaphorically, you've already got a rope waiting just in case for yourself. You know, what I find when I'm really depressed and flat is, yeah, I need to acknowledge what's going on right now. But what also helps is then I take a moment to think about my family and the people I'm truly grateful for. And that lets me know that this moment is temporary. It will pass, and onwards we go. And there's so much here in terms of, as I say, that the some of the core principles of the emotional literacy is sometimes very easy. All we need to do is hold the space and validate somebody's experience. And then if we've got, you know, boundaries and we're acknowledging boundaries and permission, then all right, what's a tip to help you move on from here? How are you making meaning of this experience? And if that's not a useful meaning, how might I help you shift that to something more meaningful? And sometimes it's not that more generalized, extroverted feeling kind of people with good extroverted feeling again are about not necessarily going into the depth of a feeling or an emotion, but rather sitting a bit more on the social surface. You know, well, we all have experiences like that. It tends to sometimes be socialized platitudes, and for some that works. Others who are driven a bit more by introverted feeling are more connected to their own subjective experience that means that what they're tuning into is what's viscerally important to them. The other terminology we might use for when we talk about people attuned to their feeler functions, be that in the extroverted expression, extroverted feeling, the guide function, or introverted feeling, the conscience function. And we're developing our skill sets in both. You sometimes find some people more naturally are able to attune to others and not so much to get to what's going on for themselves. Or some people are easily able to tune into what's subjectively important to them, but not necessarily so good at attuning to the more overall objective mood that others are displaying, or the skill sets to do something with that. And ideally, we really want to be able to develop both, because if I'm good at supporting and managing the emotions, the other terminology we might use for people who are connected to the feeler function, we might more accurately say that we're talking about the ethics, values, and relationships. People who are more aware of the external ethical impact of certain behaviors by people, And then what's my internal ethics? And by nature of tapping into our values, be they subjective and self or more objective and group, as a byproduct, we tend to carry an emotional, a visceral response to that. So am I more easy in able to attune to external relationships and sometimes at the cost of my own internal relationships? This is where, say, some people can sometimes fall into caretaking roles where they're very good at interpreting the needs and requirements of others and will continue to try to deliver on those even at the expense of themselves. I'm exhausted, I'm run down, but people need me, or I feel guilty if I stop to acknowledge myself or take on my own self-care. And ideally, from a longevity perspective, we need to be able to learn to express, grow, and expand in both sides of that equation. Not to mention then bring in the ability to effectively goal set and come up with efficient ways to get from A to B. But again, what we're looking at in this episode is a bit more around the emotive side of things, but certainly want to acknowledge that the optimum is to be able to do both. But in that kind of space and that common set, the more we can become aware of what we need as a group, but not at the cost of I, then we're getting to group success and group fulfillment more readily, and also individual success and individual fulfillment more readily, because we're not chopping those things out of the equation. I'm not succeeding for the sake of succeeding and then going, hey, I'm successful, but I feel really empty and it all seems a bit pointless. But rather, from the get-go, we're including ourselves, or if we're in a work-based culture, how does including the we in, by the very nature of that, lead directly to me getting my benefit too? Through the us, I benefit as a byproduct. So that can be a very good kind of element to foster, especially in leadership roles. That and being able to kind of get our staff to buy into that idea that when we do well, you do well. Rather than every man for him and woman for him or herself, tends to make an organization far weaker. Again, if we're kind of moving our way back to those basic principles of emotional literacy, as I say, we're not steamrolling over or dismissing the generalized mood of the group or the team, trying to focus on, hey, let's just all block that out, people, and get on with things. But we're able to be comfortable in how to address that, but to do it in an effective way that brings the team back into inspiration and productivity. And same, we're able to do that for self. There are going to be times in life where we have temporary defeats. How do I acknowledge the distress that they may bring up for me? But then how do I move through it in ways that allow me to find the gold in the experience and come away stronger, more resilient, and healed? I hope that this episode has kind of, as you can probably tell, I get very excited about this arena, and I've probably jumped around way too much in this, opened up lots of loops, but it's given me a few ideas for podcast episodes going forward. But I think it's probably a good place to kind of leave it. Remember the core things around developing and refining that emotional literacy, because there's a lot of skill sets that can be brought into this. But fundamentally, how do we acknowledge what's going on? How do we validate it? But then we're also using a realistic measuring point to say, you know, as in particular with children, you know, where's the child's developmental maturity at? Because that is part of emotional attunement, that I know what my, if your parents, that you really get what your child is capable of, because there's certainly a lot of parents who overestimate for a child's age what a child should be capable of. And in developmental maturity, you'd be wise to do a bit of research on developmental range. So that ideally, how am I kind of fostering? Because I've certainly seen in many cases where parents have overestimated what a child is capable of. And that's part of the tuning, that we really get where children are at, and then we're able in practical ways to support them. We really get where they're at emotionally, and we're able in practical ways to develop that element of them. And we're helping children make meaning. We're checking in and saying, hey, that event that happened, that was a bit sad. What do you think about that? Or how does that make you feel? You know, what kinds of things do you decide about that? Because I've certainly known over the years, even certain examples in more extremely, where young people have lost family members and nobody's even sat down to talk about it. It's just been swept under the rug. And we sometimes think that not bringing things up and not discussing problems and challenges is the most helpful way to go. Children are very energetically sensitive. They pick things up. And so as challenging as some conversations are, it really is about, you know, how much do children need to know and at what point. And often they will indicate that with a change of interest, or they'll walk away, or the eyes will glaze over. You know, it's not having to kind of explain every element in absolute detail yet. Again, we're starting with explanations that children can begin to grasp. And we're also only delivering to them as much as we perceive that they're ready for. And again, this is one of those things where, as a parent, you too have to be okay that might not be self-evident straight away. You might not know necessarily how to do certain things, or how do I explain this to my child, but with time and awareness and attention, you will get better at this. You know, what matters is setting an intention to be the kind of person who is better at being emotionally attuned and aware to a child. And then from there, it's just working towards that and being prepared that sometimes you are still going to misread. That's just part of it. But if, you know, if we're doing better to catch more things and support children more consistently, then this is a stunning tool to help children develop and be more grounded, feel more safe. It adds to their confidence. It allows them to feel comfortable enough to get out and engage in the world more readily. This is a real good developmental element. And if you're a boss or somebody who works in a business, it's exactly the same thing, that we're kind of going, how do I develop my emotional attunement to my environment and the people around me? And sometimes, as I say, we're going to take missteps. We're going to misread certain situations, but that's an opportunity to do better. I know for myself, I still do this from time to time, where I go, wow, I took that in the wrong direction. That person really didn't want me to change their story about that yet. What I should have done is just sat with them and shared in the felt space that they had. I jumped in a bit prematurely there. Because I could see their sort of resistance as I tried to offer a silver lining, whereas I probably should have sat with that a bit longer and seen if they themselves came up with a silver lining. Because that's the other element of this too. If people are self-generating, that I'm at the point where I've processed my feelings around a situation, and now you know, other cognitive elements of me are engaging. And now I'm generating my own silver linings. I'm generating my own positive meanings. That is ideal, because I own that. It's more likely to stand up under stress in the future compared to if somebody handed me the meaning. That may be very helpful sometimes, but it also, because the idea was not self-generated, under stress I might revert back to what I believe, not the belief that was handed to me, unless I've been able to kind of take it and integrate it into myself personally. So I'm big too on being able to hold the space for people so that they can self-solve. You know, that's without necessarily swinging entirely into counter-dependence and saying, hey, it's all up to you, but rather that's part of that interdependence. I'm not making them codependent on me by giving them all the answers. I'm not, you know, refusing to offer any advice, but somewhere comfortably in the interdependence range, somewhere in the middle, I'm showing you, I'm supporting you, but I'm not carrying you. That, you know, especially as an adult. I mean, we do a lot more meaning making for children, of course, because they don't have the developmental range and scope of life experiences yet. But for adults, it's slightly different in terms of how do I help you acknowledge what you're doing, but I'm not taking it all on for you. I'm not making you weaker by jumping in and giving you the solution, in particular prematurely, when you might not be ready to or be in the optimal space to receive it and make use of it. So I could go on for ages, but I think, again, that's probably a good place to wind the episode up. So again, I hope this gives you some good food for thought, gives you some things to digest and areas to kind of explore and contemplate. As always, if you're just joining the series, thank you for tuning in and listening. If you want to be able to continue to support the show, just go to Sean Healy Tools and iTunes, download, subscribe. Please leave a review, as that helps the show to expand its range. And I'm very passionate about getting some of these skill sets out for more broader public consideration and consumption, and to promote their importance. And for those of you who've been following along for some time or for the entire time of the show, as always, my immense gratitude. Thank you for listening, as always. I'm also can be found on Stitcher and TuneIn, and then of course emergencetraining.com.au. You're welcome to visit me at my website. Leave me, if you want to, leave some recommendations about episodes you might like to hear about. I'm always happy for some ideas. Because, it's kind of a process always of trying to think about what to ramble on about next. But once again, as I say, really delighted. Thank you for listening. And until the next episode, bye.